Session number 26951.
Mr. Lawson, reel 7.
Yeah, the significance of these dates: 8th of October, my mother's birthday. 9th of October, returning home. 10th of October, my wedding anniversary. 4 years. The strange things have happened since then with regard to these dates. Exactly a year to the day, my first child was born, 10th of October, 1946. My daughter Pat. Exactly two years ago, exactly to the date on the 10th of October, 2 years ago, my great grandchild was born. So the 10th of October, 8th, 10th, well, that period in October is the most significant dates in my calendar. When we came home, life was just one riotous party. We used to go anywhere that took our fancy. We always used to meet in the Grand Hotel in, gang of us used to meet in the Grand Hotel in Sunderland every lunchtime to decide what we were going to do the next day. Not what we were going to do that night, it's the next day. We always had something lined up, a dance, a party, somewhere to go where we could enjoy ourselves. Life was one long party. Until my wife said, when I got round about Christmas, she said, "Don't you think that it's about time we settled down?" I think she was getting a bit fed up with this. So I said, "Yes, I suppose." By this time, I'd been demobbed. I'd gone to York and got me a bit demob suit. And I said, "Yes, we'll."
How long after you got back were you actually demobbed? How long did that take?
Oh, 2 months, something like that. About 2 months.
And were you on leave during that
time? Oh, yes, yes. I didn't know what to do, what I was going to do, as far as work was concerned. And I mentioned earlier at the beginning of this interview that I worked in an accountant's office. So I could only go back there. Now, I went back then because employers were duty-bound to, by the government order, that they had to take back personnel, the soldiers, army personnel. So I went back and I took a job there, and my ambition to be a policeman had gone, obviously. So I decided the only thing to do was to start studying for the accountancy exams. And this I did. Pat came along after a year. Derek came along, or 200 years later. And I was working and studying at nights, and it took me a long time before I finally qualified and became an accountant. Our life was good. We had a good life. We had a good life. But we didn't have an awful lot of money. Until I qualified, and then I got what I call a proper job. And life just went on from there. I joined the coal board, which I absolutely hated. It took me a year to get out once I got in. On the administration side and finance side, obviously. And I got a job at the University of Newcastle, and I was there for something over 30 years. and had a good life, thoroughly enjoyed it, except in one period when my wife had rheumatoid arthritis, and she was very, very ill. The drugs that she was taking, really, that was what was the cause of her death, not the arthritis itself, and unfortunately she died. Let's see, now it would be perhaps about just over a year later, I married again, and to a lady who was my assistant at the university, Peg. And again, we've had a good life since. The good times, obviously I wear the bad, but the bad times in my life have been pretty horrible. Right, okay. There's one thing I missed out when I was talking about the prisoner of war life in Singapore. And I think I shouldn't have missed this out, because it was a significant happening. It was what is commonly called now the Selarang incident. This was before we went up into Thailand. We hadn't been at Roberts Barracks in Singapore very long before the Japanese wanted us to sign a paper saying we wouldn't attempt to escape. We refused, at least our officers refused on our behalf, and we were ordered to all of us go to Selarang Barracks. Selarang Barracks was a square with buildings with barracks on three sides. It normally accommodated something like 850 men. There were 16,000 men crammed into that small area. The first thing that had to be done was to provide latrines. There were only, I think, about six toilets to each block, so obviously, and no water. So we had to dig latrines, and we literally dug up the barrack square. Food was cut down to a minimum. Water was almost non-existent. You got perhaps about a pint of water a day to drink. And with being crammed in such a small space, you can imagine that malaria and dysentery in particular absolutely exploded. After 3 or 4 days, the officers, on the advice of our medical staff, said, "Look, we've got to sign this paper that we won't escape, but because we are doing it under duress, it wouldn't mean anything." We were told this, and we talked about it, and the lads all talked about it, and then it was more or less hands up who's going to sign, and the majority of us did. And we signed a bit of paper, and then we all went back to where we'd come from. But it was a horrific experience. Each man had probably a space of about 5 foot by three foot, literally shoulder to shoulder. There were queues for the latrines, and consequently the place was covered with excrement. I just can't adequately explain to you the seriousness of the situation and the conditions under which we lived. It was absolutely dreadful. Now,
how long were you there for?
Just 3 or 4 days. It had to be, because if we didn't, it would have started to die like flies, literally. I think I've just about covered everything. I have no regrets at all about what happened in the past. But people ask me what were the worst atrocities, apart from beatings, which you got used to. The worst atrocities were starvation and the withholding of medical supplies. Beatings, as I say, were commonplace. We supplemented our rice with a watery stew, with anything else edible, including snakes, birds, bamboo shoots. And in one case, a tiger was shot, and I've even eaten tiger. In one camp, I was in, I was very ill and allowed to remain in camp instead of going to work. The bamboo that you slept on was bamboo split down the middle and opened out, and there were bamboo slats. And unfortunately, they used to be infested with bugs. So we used to bang these bamboo slats on the ground from time to time, perhaps about once a week, to help rid us of the bugs, which continually sucked our blood. A few hens belonging to a Dutchman picked up the bugs in the area that I was banging my slats. Fortunately, every day, one of those hens used to come under my bed space and lay an egg. And I found this out because I heard this rustle under the bedspace. And I looked through this little hole, and there was this hen. And I went up, and there was the egg. Before you could say knife, I had that egg, and I cracked it open and swallowed it raw. The yolks of the eggs were bright red, which you can well imagine. I was virtually eating the blood out of the bugs who and out of ourselves that had been biting us. But it was nourishment, it was an egg. Unfortunately, one day the Dutchman caught me and my supply of eggs was cut off. In so-called hospital huts, the stench of rotten flesh from the men who had tropical ulcers, excrement and filth in all the places that I was in was disgusting. Flies were a constant nuisance and spreading of disease. I can't adequately describe those conditions. I can say this: nobody, but nobody in England has lived in anything like the conditions that we lived in. I've talked for quite some time, I could talk for days more. And a lot of people still wouldn't believe because they weren't there. During the 3.5 years as a POW, I was allowed to send two cards home and received one letter. As I say, I could talk a lot longer about POW survival life, and I hope that I've been able to convey the unspeakable conditions and hardships under which we were held. I've already said I have no regrets about life, and I can honestly say I have no regrets about those 3.5 years of hell, because I survived the war, whereas I might have been killed in some other theatre of war. It has had a strong influence on my outlook and philosophy of life. It also taught me the true meaning of discipline, respect, comradeship and survival, and also the ability to get on with life no matter what it has to offer. It makes me smile when people these days seem to seek counselling for almost anything and compensation for almost anything. We were taken literally from the jungle and pitched into civilization and just got on with it. We are told by some people that we should forgive and forget. I say to these people, they did not experience the physical and mental torture we did. I will never forgive or forget. In 1985, I was fortunate to be successful in a ballot held by the Ministry of Defence to go on a pilgrimage to the Far East. In celebration of the 40th anniversary of the end of the war. The end of the war to us, of course, was the 15th of August, VJ Day, not VE Day. This was a moving experience. As I went back to Thailand and visited Chiang Kai Cemetery, where I saw the grave of my dearest friend, Derek Ward. Among those young men, why was the 18th Division sent to Singapore so late in the campaign when it was obvious that the Japs were going to take the island? Were we sacrificed? Last year, I went to the National Arboretum at Allerwas in Staffordshire, where a plot of land and a section of the original Railway of Death were dedicated. I have dedicated a tree to be planted in memory of Derek Ward, who my son is named after. I hope this tape will be useful in some way, educational, historical, or whatever. In conclusion, I'm going to say the Feepo prayer. As we that are left grow old with the years, remembering the heartache, the pain and the tears, hoping and praying that never again man will sink to such sorrow and shame. The price that we paid, we will always remember. Every day, every month, not just in November. If anyone needs additional information about the Far East Prisoners of War, I would recommend a small book entitled The POW Sketchbook of Survival by Judy and Stuart Dewey, D-E-W-E-Y, through the diary and drawings of Will Wilder, published by Pye Powder Press. For photographs, a book called The Changi Photographer, which is a book about an Australian called George Aspinall, who managed to keep a camera during his prisoner of war days. And this is this shows you some of the photographs that he took. Thank you.
Thank you very much.